So, what's trending? Bridging your Catholic faith with your everyday life. You're listening to Trending with Timory on Relevant Radio.
It is so great to be here. I am back in my beloved home state of California, and what better way to kick it off than not just with a surfer, but with a priest, our very own Father Tim Grumbach, who's just moved to Bishop Alemany School in the Los Angeles Diocese as the chaplain for the school. And he's joining us here at Vox Vitae in Alhambra, California. We're working with all of the youth who have come for this Catholic pro-life leadership training program. It's so good to be here. You get to be a part of the Q&A in the program this week. And Father Tim, I want to dive into some really fun topics. Everything from Loki on Disney Plus to binge watching, having hope in challenging times or challenging moments in family life, work, everything that happens, but then also what nourishes us. You know, as a priest, you live a very exhausting life in terms of you're dealing with some of the toughest things that people go through. You don't always just hear the joyful moments. And as well, I want to dive into like what nourishes us, what keeps us going from fun to faith. So we'll dive into that and more, but let's talk a little bit about this new Disney Plus show, Loki.
Yeah, we definitely have to give a little bit of a spoiler warning, don't we? Because you know, I'll talk a little bit about some of the details. I won't reveal the ending, but there are some little cliffhangers and details that reveal themselves all throughout the episodes. It's a 6-episode season on Disney Plus. It's a Marvel series, and so it ties into the larger Marvel Cinematic Universe. And compared to the rest of the TV shows on Disney Plus, it's doing more to change the direction of the MCU than any other movie or show at the moment. And so there will be some spoilers. So, you know, but we'll talk more about spoilers when we're talking about binge watching and the different kind of habits that we take to try to nourish ourselves with worldly things, but to find that it never ultimately satisfies. And I think that is something that's at the heart of the show Loki, even though they won't admit it. And so just to kind of give a quick rundown of what the show is about, is in the chronology of the Marvel Cinematic Universe, it takes place right after the Avengers, which is, I think, 2012, this big battle of New York. Loki comes in and he wants to conquer Earth because he wants to rule a planet. And so he brings a bunch of aliens with him through a portal. And the Avengers gather together for the first time to fight against him. And it becomes Loki's role throughout the MCU to always be defeated and always be the hinge around the success of the heroes. And so he's the classic comic book villain. So this show is all about him trying to find his identity aside from being a villain and aside from always being defeated and trying to find out what it means to be Loki. And the way they do that is they enter into a new phase in Marvel where they're exploring multiple universes, the multiverse, and multiple timelines and alternate timelines and variant persons on different timelines. And it gets very confusing. But at the heart of it is the story of time travel. And I'm thinking a lot about time travel these last couple of weeks because movie after movie is all about time travel. You have, I mean, first of all, the Avengers is about they lose their most important battle, and their only way to win a victory is to go back in time and change everything.
Doctor Strange changed everything.
Right, that's right, yeah. And there was another movie that came out called The Tomorrow War with Chris Pratt as well.
Is this recent?
Very recent, the beginning of this month.
Okay.
On Amazon. And it's a story about aliens invading in the future, 30 years in the future. And so our children and grandchildren come back into our time to recruit us to fight their war. It's not the best strategy, but it's just the idea of we can't win or we can't be obedient to the events that are happening to us, that we need to go back into the past or into the future to change our present. Mm-hmm. And so that's one of the themes that Loki is very much exploring, is that there's something wrong with my now, so I need to go back and change it. And in Marvel, the way that time travel works is that, or at least the way they claim it works, is that every time something is changed in the timeline, an alternate timeline is created, or an alternate universe, if you will. So it's not one universe, it's a multiverse. And so you have every time a universe, a timeline breaks off, that person who did that act of breaking the timeline, a variant is created of themselves. And so you have multiple variant versions of Loki
living at the same time in multiple parallel universes?
Exactly.
Okay.
Yes. And so sometimes they look alike. Sometimes they look very different. And, you know, here comes a spoiler, is that one of the variants, one of the main characters in this Loki series is a female Loki. Which happens in the comics. And so it's not they're just making something up to be along with the times.
This is fascinating, actually, for just a moment, because this is where you see, you could say, politically driven agendas with gender ideology cutting into the Marvel Universe, which has been occurring for the last 10 years. But also you can see that this was something that was part of Loki's character all along. And so then how do we kind of walk through the waters? Because there are people who just love the comics and they're going, oh, wow, this is a part of the comic story of Loki. And there are others who are going to be frustrated saying, well, this is pushing more gender ideology. But Father Tim, what fascinates me with this, and I want to keep hearing your thoughts, is like where we see this desire for something so mysterious in a person, in a character that's meant to be in, I mean, basically a comic series centered around a universe in a mythological sci-fi story. But in reality, it's so interesting. We try to turn that mythological sci-fi story into our own story today.
Right. And a lot of people commenting on this idea that Loki is gender fluid. That there is a male version of Loki and a female version of Loki, but it doesn't take into account what we as Christians, what we as Catholics believe in within a Christian human anthropology, is that we are body and soul, is that there are not multiple timelines where we exist as different persons. And I don't know, if there is such a thing, God is capable of creating something like that, but it's not the same us.
And it's not part of divine revelation, which
right.
is very
so
important.
Don't know. Yeah.
It's not a part of divine revelation. It's not a part of natural law. Right. And it doesn't match any of our sciences today.
Right, right. The idea that we exist in multiple forms, that our soul is somehow spread out across multiple bodies and multiple universes. Just scientifically, we don't know, but it's not a part of our divine revelation and our Christian anthropology, that is, who we are as humans in the light of divine revelation and in the light of who Jesus Christ is.
Okay, I just had a really kind of interesting thought. And if you're just joining us, you're listening to Trending with Tim Murray here on Relevant Radio. Father Tim Grumbach's joining me. I'm in California, and it's great. Can I just say that again? California Girl reunites out here. But Father Tim, this is almost one of those moments of a warning. Because, and here's why. It used to be, we could dive into the realm of fantasy, sci-fi, mythology. I'm a total geek, if you don't know this. I love fantasy series. Like, everything from Lord of the Rings, my favorite ever is David Eddings. But you've got to be careful, because there can be exposure into creepy things, from magic going too far, from like any form of a story, you need to have context. You need to understand this is a fantasy. This is an analogy of things. This isn't reality. But I think that we've hit, in the last 6 years, this transition where we went from a world who read things and contemplated them and enjoyed an imagination to now this is on a movie screen in 3D for us. And I almost wonder if, because Loki's story, who did have a parallel universe female version in a comic book, that's one thing where we're reading about it, but now we're seeing physical portrayals of it in our face. Do you think that that's creating confusion with regard to this gender fluidity, where we can no longer separate mythology and fantasy and enjoying our imagination? Now we have to try and make it real and assimilate to it.
Especially since the Marvel Cinematic Universe is a world very similar to ours, where suddenly aliens are showing up and superheroes are showing up. I mean, it happens in New York. It happens in Los Angeles.
They put it in
our time, in our place, and even a little bit into the future. So we wonder, maybe that is coming along in our future as well. I remember talking with your husband, Gabriel, about this, the difference between Lord of the Rings and, say, Harry Potter. And of course, there's a lot of differences there. But as far as the use of magic in those two stories,
right,
is that Lord of the Rings is set in a universe of its own.
A make-believe universe with a make-believe language.
Right, which reveals or dives into the revealed truth of what it means to be Catholic and Christian, but does it in a fantasy setting. You know, it has all those truths in there, and nobody is, well, that character is clearly Jesus, right?
Right.
You know, but Harry Potter, on the other hand, is something that can seems to be able to take place in our time. And so instead of kids living in the fantasy world of Lord of the Rings, like, I want to be Frodo. I want to go on this adventure. I want to be Sam. I want to be his best friend who goes with him. I want to be Gandalf with the magic powers. And it's all in fantasy. But instead now with something like Harry Potter is that, you know, these kids are like, I want to go find Hogwarts. Mm-hmm. I want to be a magician, a wizard who lives in this world. And so, you know, the way that story is told, it's a very different way. And you have to, you know, determine what is that a safe way to enter into a fantasy story, is to think it could happen in this world.
Mm-hmm.
But with that said, Marvel is doing something similar to Harry Potter, if you will, is that there are some truths told in those stories. But it also is something where we can get lost in that story because it takes place in our world.
Right.
Right. And so you have someone like Loki, who is based off of a Norse god by the same name, who is the god of mischief, who his offspring include a giant snake and a wolf, among other strange...
That shouldn't tell you anything in and of itself, what wolf and a snake represent.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. And... that part of his character hasn't come out in the movies yet or in the TV show yet. I'm just having a really tough time, aside from the language of gender fluidity. Let's talk about that for a moment.
Yeah.
I'm sure somebody has tried to define it in a very logical way out there, but my question is, when we refer to gender fluidity, is this something where we're talking about a person who can go back and forth with genders, or are we talking about the nature of gender in general? Is that the nature of gender is fluid, or are we talking about a person's gender is fluid? Because the way they present it in Loki, or try to present it, is that it is something that happens within one person. That sometimes he's a guy, sometimes he's a girl, sometimes he loves men, sometimes he loves women. And there's even a reference to his romantic experiences. It's very brief. It's only one line. And he refers to, sometimes men, sometimes women. And because of this, Loki becomes this...
And what's the age demographic for this show? I think this is also a warning
as
well.
It's Disney Plus, so it's definitely for teenagers.
Right.
Being presented for teenagers.
And it makes it sound like it's okay. What does it matter? Boys, girls, what's the difference?
Yeah.
So there is one.
Yeah. So here are a couple of things we need to consider when people try to lift up this character of Loki, who does have a redemption arc of sorts throughout the series.
Right.
And I do appreciate that in one sense, is that we want to see people who are struggling with their woundedness find some redemption. And that's the way they present Loki. But let's also consider that it's a real trend throughout stories, especially in Disney right now, is to take the villains and to try to make them look, oh, they're not so bad. They just, you know, they were hurt in their past,
the
and that's why they're doing this.
Right.
And that's a truth about our lived experience, is some people who do bad things are because they've been hurt themselves.
But there's no full character development, and that's the problem.
Right.
A good, true story tells a full arc.
Right.
And that's where we see a glimmer of hope, because ultimately we see ourselves in stories.
Right.
We see hope. We see there's one thing to see a struggle within a character, but it's another thing if we create these anti-heroes and we glorify the villain who, well, it's okay, they went through X, Y, and Z, and we never expect actual change. That's the problem.
Yeah. Well, I think that Loki is actually doing a good job with that, is by the end of this season, there will be multiple seasons, which is a new thing for Disney Plus and their Marvel shows, is that that's his constant struggle, is that he's always tempted back towards betrayal and towards power. But it seems by the end of this season that he has finally let go of that.
Mm-hmm.
But my concern about telling those kinds of stories about the villains is that we no longer have the story told for the reason of saying there is good and there is evil.
Right.
Right. They're trying to be realistic to our lived experience, that sometimes people who do bad things are it's because bad things have been done to them and they don't know how to love or whatnot. Like, that happens sometimes. And so in this search for realistic stories, they're not able to tell the greater archetypal story that there is good and there is evil and good will conquer evil in the end.
And
so that's why we tell stories where there are good guys and bad guys, not
right.
because we're trying to tap into the real lived experience of woundedness within people.
And that's where you see the anti-heroes, where you see the glorification of the villain, but where you also are seeing over and over again, people are trying to make it sound like the ends always justify the means, so that you can do whatever you want as long as in the end it turns out okay. And that's, I think, part of the problem as well. And if you're just joining us, you're listening to Trending with Tim right here on Relevant Radio. That's Father Tim Grumbach. We're diving into the new Loki series on Disney Plus, available in this gender fluidity that we see. I want to come back to something you said about gender fluidity because I think it's important. They are portraying Loki, who has always had in parallel universes a female version of himself in actual comics. So this isn't new. It's just the perfect story for them to use in 2021 when we have this rampant LGBTQ agenda. But the thing is that I found fascinating about what you were asking surrounding gender fluidity, the problem with gender fluidity today is that you can say, as a female, I am attracted now to women. But what you can't do is once you say that you're attracted to someone of the same sex, you can't go back and say, but actually, I'm still attracted to men too. Or you also can't then say, I'm no longer attracted to women. My gender fluidity is fluid and went back to my actual matching up with my biological reality. That's a problem with gender fluidity. Once you say that you're not now trans, bi, or same-sex attracted, you have to stick within that. There's no fluidity in both ways. And that's part of the problem, is that we don't acknowledge that different things can wound, damage, and influence sexuality at a time. And that especially includes television and movies, pornography addictions, and so much more. And so I think that when you're talking about gender fluidity, everyone's allowing for this definition of it to be so subjective and relative to my reality, versus experiencing and emphasizing that there are a lot of external influences in a way that we've never experienced before that are influencing sexuality in a negative sense. And we need to help people honor and respect, as people of faith, the biological reality, the physiological reality, the sexual complementarity, and the reality that we have a soul and God created us male or female.
Yeah. And the show Loki does explore some of those themes about the way that his woundedness and his wanting to have attention, and the only way he knew how to get that was by hurting other people, how that affected his character development. It doesn't say anything about how that affects his sexuality or his gender fluidity, because that would be dangerous ground to tread on in a Disney Plus show, wouldn't it? But you can still refer to
it. Not like they're
it,
doing right. it under the ground, like right. just undertones right. of that at
yeah.
all.
Yeah, and so there's some paperwork. People are really good about looking at the tiniest little details, freezing the screen and finding details in the background and everything like that for shows like this. And so they found on some paperwork on a desk that it said Loki's name and that his gender was fluid. And that became the moment that everyone rejoiced that, oh, good, they're finally admitting that Loki's gender is fluid. And then he has that mention, that line where he's talking to his female self about loving men and women. And people rejoice. And suddenly Loki has become this gender fluidity
icon.
And that's really dangerous, because let's remember that this show began immediately as he was escaping from his defeat in the Battle of New York, where he meant to enslave humanity using aliens and take control of the Earth. And he looked at the humans on Earth, and he kept saying, you should bow down. Your proper place is on your knees, because I am a god. And there's this awesome moment right when he's defeated that the Incredible Hulk, big and green, comes out and kind of grabs him by the ankle, like ragdolls him around the room.
It's a great moment.
And the Hulk's words are, puny god, right? And so there's all, Loki's whole character arc is about him, thinking he should be most powerful because he's a god, but always being defeated, but always surviving. So anyways, let's consider this, is we're suddenly making into this gender fluidity icon this godlike character who uses his powers and literally tried to enslave humanity using aliens, but was defeated by a big green Hulk. And then we don't even consider that, what if his reference to loving men and women is this is somebody who was willing to take over the Earth by crushing them with aliens? I'm sure that every one of his relationships was perfectly consensual and respectful. We're talking about someone who wanted to become a dictator and a ruler and to crush humanity under his feet. And now, suddenly, after a few days, a few episodes, he's an icon of sexuality. Especially since, for so many people these days, the only consideration in sexuality is consent. Mm-hmm. I just have a tough time imagining that Loki is a paragon of human sexuality just hours after he's just tried to destroy the Earth.
Right. He has a twisted view of what love is, and isn't that the problem?
Yeah.
At the end of the day, as we're in the midst of this gender dysphoria crisis for people surrounding sexuality, people are begging the question, what is love? And we have one side saying, well, love can be anything you want it to be. Then you have the other side saying, no, there actually is a proper ordered love. There's a proper way to treat another human person that includes pondering and being aware of their biology and physiology, but also recognizing you have an eternal soul, a soul made to be with God in eternity.
Right. And along with Loki's very wounded soul and his inability to love, his only way to express love is by hurting other people and trying to take over the Earth with aliens. and then in his, the character that he's drawn from in Norse mythology, his offspring are a wolf and a snake and, other bizarre things. And some of those were born because he became like a mare, like a female horse, in order to give birth. And so I don't know how he can become this paragon of human sexuality with stories like that, but that's the length that, logically this is all going to go with gender fluidity is, does it stop at humans?
Right. Oh, and that's the scary thing. And it hasn't. And I mean, we could go into like how far this lack of clarity with the biological complementarity of male and female, we are seeing people, and I'm sorry to go there, but like entering into the realm of bestiality or engagement with children, this is part of what a disfigured, damaged view of sexuality does. But I want to come to something else. And if you're just joining us, again, that's Father Tim Grumbach here on Trending with Tim Murray. You're listening to Relevant Radio. Briefly, I want to bring up a line from the Daily Dot. It's a commentary on Loki and his gender fluidity in the new Disney Plus show. And it says, Loki's mind, body, and soul are magic and malleable, refusing precise categorization while resonating with many non-binary and gender fluid trans fans. And I thought this was fascinating because what it's saying is Loki's mind, body, and soul are magical and malleable. This is fascinating to hear because this is exactly what people want. I'm unique. I'm special. There's something interesting and different about me. And so everyone's turning to this gender, queer, non-binary, you name it, cisgender identity. At the end of the day, what people really want, Father Tim, is to be heard, to be known, and to be loved. And that is known when you recognize you have a creator who loved you into existence and loves you into existence at every single moment of your life. He created you to be with him. And you don't have to pretend you're something you're not in order to be known and loved. And I think that that is what is so important at the heart of this whole story of Loki and the crisis of gender ideology, that the reality is you don't have to pretend. You don't have to enter into a pretend world or tell a lie about your body to know you are loved, you are chosen, and important. And we need to be willing to tell people this precise narrative. We'll be right back here on Trending with Tim Ray with Father Tim Grumbach. It's great to be with you. We'll be diving into binge-watching, hope, and what fills us up and nourishes us in the midst of the culture we live in today. Catholic Order of Foresters is proud to sponsor the Relevant Radio Studio Line. For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans, visit relevantradio.com/Forester.
So, what's trending? Bridging your Catholic faith with your everyday life. You're listening to Trending with Timory on Relevant Radio and the Relevant Radio app.
Welcome back. I'm here with Father Tim Grumbach from the Archdiocese of Los Angeles with Bishop Alemany School. You are now the chaplain there. Congratulations on your new position. I want to dive into, we've been talking about Loki in this new Disney Plus show, and we're going to dive into binge watching, spoilers, hope, and also what nourishes us from fun to faith to keep us going day to day. But you have one more thought on this whole Loki universe, which was fascinating because they're using him as a pillar for the gender ideology movement. And if you missed the conversation, head over to relevantradio.com/trending.
Right. And we were just saying about how important it is for all of us, no matter what our experience of gender is, to know ourselves rooted in God's love for us and how God has created us, and living from that place, living from a place of being created by love and for love, and learning to love ourselves, right, as in, within God's plan. And another way that Loki tries to show that whole loving yourself thing is, it's very strange, is that you have these alternate Lokis, one is male and one is female. And again, without too many spoilers, there becomes some romantic tension between them. And they even refer to this as one of the characters says, Loki, you're so narcissistic. The only person that you can love is yourself. You know, I guess that was my best Owen Wilson impression. I don't know. Owen Wilson does an amazing job in the show as well. But just the way that the only person Loki falls in love with is another version of himself. And that does touch on what I've heard in some psychological explanations of same-sex attraction is a certain, and I know this word is difficult for a lot of people, but a certain narcissism is that within the complementarity of human sexuality, male and female, God created them, is that you look at another person who is in a certain way fundamentally different from you. And there's always going to be that difference, and it's always going to cause some kind of pain, but that difference and not being able to understand the person perfectly. But in that tension, the romantic love becomes something that flowers and flourishes. Mm-hmm. But, you know, Loki is presented as somebody as the person who teaches him how to love is himself. Mm-hmm. And there's a certain narcissism about that. And so that's something that can continue the discussion. And so we are, you know, the TV show is kind of lifting Loki up as this paragon, this pillar of human sexuality, when really we should be looking at this person, this character who is just human enough for us to say it's something about human sexuality, and just God enough to say that this is the way things should be, when we should be looking at the true God-man, Jesus Christ, within, yes, his sexuality is something to important to be aware of in the way that he lived it out in celibacy. And that's why we as priests, especially in the Roman Catholic Rite, take our promises of celibacy very seriously in imitation and participation of Jesus's own celibacy and sexuality, so that he is not just saying no to human sexuality, but there are no's that are to be said always at the service of the greater yes, of giving ourselves away as Jesus gave himself away on the cross. So ultimately, what I would say about Loki is that we should not be looking to a Marvel character to tell us about our human sexuality, but about God made man, God incarnate, to tell us about our human sexuality.
Amen. You're listening to Trending with Tim Murray here on Relevant Radio. That is Father Tim Grumbach from the Archdiocese of Los Angeles, the new chaplain at Bishop Alemany High School. Alemany. I'm getting That's used right. to this. So, Father Tim, let's touch on binge watching and spoilers, because right now we are seeing, we cannot handle it because there are new shows coming out. We want to see them now. And unlike Netflix, who has been dumping a season all at once, Disney Plus, from Mandalorian to Loki, it's one at a time, and we have to wait. And it's not feeding our addiction and binge-watching behavior, and let's admit it, we all have it. What do we do?
Right. I'm going to admit to my shame, I suppose, without revealing too much of my conscience, you could say, is that Loki would come out on Wednesdays, right? But what that meant was midnight on Tuesday. And so...
No, Father, I thought you got rid of, like, Netflix and TV at some point, too. I thought you were joining. If you don't know, my household, we've ditched the TV. I think we've taken the laptop off, like, 3 or 4 times in the last year to watch something.
I have fallen.
You need to come visit again.
So what I would do with some of these Tuesday nights is, like, take a nap from, like, 10 to midnight. Get up and watch Loki, and then get back to sleep at about like 1 o'clock.
I won't ask you if that's how you fast.
No, I won't admit it, but and that was because I wanted to see it at the same time that my friends were watching it, and so that I could wake up in the morning and be ready to go to talk
about
it. You're
not social,
right? Oh yeah, I have no friends. But the way that these TV series are going back to an episode a week rather than just pouring it all out so that people, you know, and that's one of the
kids. This is how it used to be.
Yeah. This is one of the things that has bothered me too, is that, you know, on Netflix or Amazon or other streaming platforms, they'll have a category of shows called binge worthy. And that's, you know, it's just feeding on the unhealthy aspect of this kind of entertainment, but also the unhealthy way of telling a story and telling a good story is that, you know, Loki leaned heavily into cliffhangers at the end of every episode. So, oh, I have to wait a whole week. I have to get up at midnight on Tuesday night to watch, you know, this new episode.
Okay, you know what's funny about this, though, is my mom loves, like, we grew up watching some really fun shows. I am old enough to have actually had to wait for shows to come out as a family. And now there's a show that we've been watching, and I have, like, whipped out the laptop to watch it. It's called Heartland. It's a Canadian show. It's, like, one of the longest-running shows. And it's so funny because I think the episodes are coming out on Tuesday. Then she'd call me the next day. Have you watched it? I want to discuss. I'm like, oh, I'm like 4 weeks behind. She's like, you need to watch. And she's like, it's out. It came out. And it's so funny because we do, like, in order to keep up, you feel like you have to watch it in order to have a conversation, or else someone's going to want to spoil it for you, or you'll spoil it for someone else. You don't know what you can and can't talk about.
Right, and that's the danger of binge watching, is that some people will binge and some people won't have the time to do it, but you want to talk to the person about it, and you don't want someone spoiling it for you, but you really want to talk to somebody about it. And I've found this is like a serious thing, a lighthearted thing, but a serious thing too when I'm doing marriage preparation, is that some of these couples, I'll, you know, kind of build a friendship with them, and we can talk about these TV shows or these movies. And they're like weeks behind because their fiance hasn't been able to watch it with them. And they have a rule, like, you're not allowed to watch this show without me, sort of thing. And so, you know, I can see the real sacrifice that comes with married life, you know?
You're like, I'm glad. Yeah. I forfeited that.
The freedom we have as priests to watch TV whenever we want, right? Although the parish that I'm living at right now is just a beautiful little community of priests. And we watched the Star Wars Bad Batch together on Friday nights. And so it's really neat to have that little community that that we do get to watch shows together.
Okay, speaking of Star Wars, the worst spoiler. I hadn't seen one of the newer Star Wars movies. I don't know which one it is. And sorry, this is a spoiler, but it's years old now. I hadn't seen it. My brother and I are talking, and he tells me Han Solo dies before I even see the movie. I'm like, are you kidding me? I was like, okay.
Okay, I'm still pretending that didn't even happen.
I know. We got to pretend it didn't happen, but I had to pretend it didn't happen while watching it for the first time.
Yeah. I remember The Simpsons made fun of that, where they had a flashback of Homer and Marge coming out of the movie theater, and it says The Empire Strikes Back up on the marquee, and Homer comes walking out of the theater very loudly saying, I can't believe that Darth Vader is Luke Skywalker's father.
Oh, no.
Well, everyone's waiting out in line. You know. So that's what I'm always thinking of with spoilers. But I've been thinking a lot about spoilers and what it has to do with binge watching and the way that we want to get to the end of the story as quickly as possible before somebody can spoil it for us, mm-hmm. or so that we can talk about it with somebody. But the way that, you know, we're afraid of spoilers in our entertainment, but when we're making decisions in life, we want the spoilers, don't we? We want to know how it will end. I'm just thinking about this with discernment, just walking with people in discernment. Like, we want to know we will be successful when we discern something. Because if we knew we were going to fail, at least from our perspective, not necessarily from God's, then it's going to be really hard for us to say yes to God. Mm-hmm. And so we want to know that what we're going to do is going to be successful. And that becomes the easiest point of discernment. Like, oh, I know I can succeed at this, so I'm going to choose to do this. So that speaks a lot to the spiritual life and how it speaks to discernment. It's not just about choosing what you know you'll be successful in. And the reason I'm thinking about this is because of the gospel that we just heard on this last Sunday of the 12 coming back from their successful mission that Jesus sent them on with his own authority to cast out demons and to heal the sick. And I just kind of wonder, with the 12 sent by Jesus, they are apostles now, would that mission have been easier knowing they had Jesus' authority, knowing that they were going to be victorious over these illnesses and these demons? And how,
because they would have done it if they knew they were going to be successful.
Right. If you know, it's like Peter stepping out of the boat. He didn't step out of the boat expecting to sink. He stepped out of that boat because he knew he was going to be able to walk. He trusted Jesus. And that's a good thing, to be able to trust God and to have his authority and to perform signs and wonders in Jesus' name. That's not a bad thing. That's not what I'm saying. But if we understand the way that Mark tells a story, especially, and in his gospel over and over again, he starts a story, gets interrupted with another story, and then finishes the first story. It's the Markan sandwich, right? Mm-hmm. And that the story in the middle, the meat of the story, gives meaning to the bread on the sides. Mm. Well, the apostles' mission, being sent out, one piece of bread, coming back, the other piece of bread. Well, what's the meat of that story? What gives meaning to it? Because we don't name a sandwich after its bread, typically. We name it after the meat in the middle. It's the story of John the Baptist's martyrdom alone and faithful in prison. And so Mark is pretty much telling his readers and us that it doesn't matter how successful you are, or you think you are, or how powerful you are, even in Jesus' name, unless you're also faithful like John the Baptist. Mm. Maybe awaiting for Jesus to come save you, but the most glorious thing that you can do is to give your life in faithfulness to Jesus. And so that's at the heart of the gospel we've been hearing the last couple of weeks in Mass, is Mark telling the story saying, it's not about how powerful and successful you are, it's about how faithful you are. And how we want to avoid spoilers because we don't want to know how our story ends before we see it. But we also kind of, we want to talk to somebody about how that story ended. And so we're afraid of being the ones who spoil. But when we discern, we want the spoiler. We want to know how it's going to turn out. But that's not the Christian life. The Christian life is about a fidelity going into the places like John the Baptist went to, knowing, you know, this is going to look like failure to the world, but look at the cross. And it goes back to John's father's prophecy when he was born, that you shall prepare the way of the Lord, even until death, mm-hmm. even though that's not in the prophecy. But that's ultimately what it was pointing to, was John's fidelity in prison while the apostles are being sent out with the authority of Jesus. And that we want spoilers for our discernment, but that's not the way of the Christian life.
You know, it's interesting as you say that, because I was in business school before studying theology and everything else. And there's this phrase that one of my professors would say. He'd say, plan your work, do your work, get paid for your work, and debrief. And in the Christian worldview, we need to take some of that. We need to plan our work, project what we're going to do, do it, and then debrief. And that's part of the whole examination of conscience, that we can plan for how something will go. We'll do it, and it won't go exactly as we hoped or planned, but we can plan. We can have parameters. We can have guidelines. We can have hope. But then at the end of the day, we need to debrief. We need to have that examination of conscience to reevaluate, to transition, to challenge ourselves, and to adapt into what the reality of life actually is. You're listening to Trending with Tim Ray here on Relevant Radio. That's Father Tim Grumbach. We'll be right back talking about hope and what nourishes us.
We're talking about what you're thinking about. You're listening to Trending with Timory on Relevant Radio and the Relevant Radio app.
I'm back with Father Tim Grumbach from the Archdiocese of Los Angeles, and he is a new chaplain at Bishop Alemany School, working with high schoolers. Father Tim, you are now, as I just said, working with high schoolers, and you will see the good, the bad, and the ugly. You'll see the challenges that the high schoolers face in the culture today. You'll see the rawness of their sins. You'll see the brainwashing that they're going through in the culture and the social media influence. It'll be rough. And at the same time, you're going to be in the midst of the hope and the joy of youthfulness and desire and ambition and this youthful energy for God. And I wanted, because of that, to dive into this topic of what nourishes you in the mission that you're working on and how you find hope. Because it's something, I was talking to a friend of mine the other day. He works in the field of therapy. And he's like, this has been a really rough week. And he said, it's been even more difficult because I've been working a lot with minors. And he said, it's totally different. And he asked me, he said, what keeps you going? Like, how do you handle doing what you do? And I want to throw this back to you in a minute, but just briefly, I want to share for me, I grew up in the pro-life movement. I saw the good, the bad, and the ugly, from the inner political drama among pro-lifers to the horror of what abortion is. And it's one of those things where you have to find a balance of decompartmentalizing, separating things out. I was at the point where I would have nightmares and almost like daytime, like, images were practically before my eyes of what abortion was. I remember having a conversation with my mom, like, you have to separate it out, and that was important. We can't become numb, but we have to be strong in Christ. And so separating that out also includes leaving it all to our Lord. And I know for me, daily attendance at Mass has been fundamental for that. I'm truly like, here's my offering, God, and my offering is like, I'm struggling. My offering is everything I'm doing. My offering is that you're ultimately edifying me, but also that 30 silent minutes of prayer a day. If I'm missing those two things, it can make it really challenging to do what we do in the culture today because we're not being filled up.
Right, and the essential line that just came to my mind about the way that we are nourished by hope is Romans 5:5, right here. You know, hope does not disappoint because the love of God has been poured out into our hearts through the Holy Spirit that has been given to us. And where else does that happen more powerfully than in the sacraments? And so, yes, I'm going into high school ministry as a chaplain full-time at Bishop Alemany High School here in Los Angeles. And I would love, like the apostles, to know that I can say the words and people will be healed. That I can cast out demons and raise the dead and heal the sick. And God may do things like that. But I want to know how it ends before saying yes, right? I want that spoiler when it comes to my discernment. But that's not what I'm going to get. And so I was just talking with a friend of mine who's about to head into full-time missions with Life Team. And she was asking me, what is one of the things that we need to be aware of most when serving the teenagers, the students in the Catholic Church right now? And just what struck me is the idea, the word rest, is I don't think our young people are getting any rest.
No, they aren't.
And one of the places where we should be finding rest the most is because we are created by love and for love. We are made for communion, is within relationships, human and divine. But especially in human relationships and the way that our technology and our social media, so prevalent in the culture of the youth, it's taking rest away. It's supposed to be a place of rest. Relationship is supposed to be a place of rest where we can be nourished by someone's relationship and someone's love, where we can give love and receive love. But people's relationships are becoming about the attention that comes with social media.
We can't even just sit and talk to each other without being on our phones.
Right. And the constant stress of having that whole community of social media in our pocket at any time.
Right.
And knowing that they're waiting for me to say something, to do something, to react to something. Mm-hmm. I mean, we've seen this as a church a lot lately, but especially this last weekend, right? That's a whole nother story, a whole nother conversation. But almost every priest who offers the Latin Mass, what are your thoughts on this? And but we won't go into that. But just this expectation that we are heard and seen and we have a reaction, not necessarily a response to everything that's happening around us. And I see that happening a lot in the lives of teens, is their inability to rest, not just in a practical sense because they might be on social media all night, taking away their sleep, but because the place of rest,
they can't relax
is not offering them that chance to relax with people.
But what for you specifically helps you to recover? And this could be everything from having fun that nourishes you to your spiritual life that nourishes you.
Right. And that's why I hope entering into this ministry to make the sacraments the center of my ministry at the school. Right. I hope to be in the classroom teaching by the spring semester. I'll be in charge of retreats for the seniors and the juniors. So I'm really excited about all of this. But at the heart of it is going to have to be the sacraments. I want to offer daily mass at the high school for those who can make it. And I want to, we'll see if I eat my words or not, but I want to be able to offer daily confessions. I don't know who's going to show up for that.
They will. But if you're there every day,
I'll show up
eventually.
And they'll show up. And so I want to, even though there are a lot of non-Catholic students at schools like this now, but I want to make those sacraments available. And because I was helping out at another school here in Los Angeles, and a lot of the students would spend their whole lunchtime waiting in line for confessions. I'm like, this is the place where I want to be.
Well, and here even now we're at Vox Vitae here in Southern California in Alhambra, and we're here with hundreds of youth, and they're here for this Catholic Pro-Life Leadership Training Program. And every single day, every year we've had this, I think this is our fifth or sixth year, the best part is every single day these kids go pray the rosary, go to adoration, receive Holy Communion in the Eucharist at Mass, and they go to confession. And guess what? Every single day, the confession line is full. We can't even get enough priests to hear the confessions. I mean, the fact that these kids are starving for confession is such a good sign. And I love that that's what you're saying. Not only what you want to offer to the high schoolers, but you're saying, this is what I myself need. I need to be nourished by the Eucharist and confession.
Right, yeah. And it's the classic dictum about the faith is you cannot give what you have not first received, right? I can sense it in myself if I've not gone to confession as often as I should, when I start hearing confessions, there's something missing in my heart to be able to offer to the penitent.
Amen.
And that happens, you know, in offering Mass. If I'm not praying as much as I can, if I'm not spending, you know, my prayer time is at night. I know a lot of priests who first thing they do in the morning is go to the sacrament chapel and spend time in prayer with Jesus in their coffee. I rather spend the last hours of my day in the chapel, in the rectory, admittedly often falling asleep on the ground in front of the Blessed Sacrament.
That's some of the best prayers.
Yeah. You know, a lot of saints, you hear they leave like marks on the ground where they were kneeling in prayer. Like, I'm going to leave like a face mark on the carpet in front of the Blessed Sacrament. Right?
Or if you're me, I'm a drooler when I fall asleep. It's like, oh, great.
Yeah. So that's where the nourishment happens spiritually. And I say spiritually, not to say that there's some kind of difference between our spiritual life and our daily life. There really shouldn't be.
Absolutely. But let's talk about some of the fun things then. If you're just joining us, that's Father Tim Grumbach here on Trending with Tim Ray on Relevant Radio. It's great to be with you. I'm in California and loving it. Oops, sorry if I didn't tell you and you're a loved one listening right now. I get in trouble. You know, someone posts on social media and you're like, oh, crap, I didn't have time to tell everyone. But Father Tim, what do you do for fun then that nourishes you? Because we have to remember our faith nourishes us, but we're body and soul, and God's given us talents, desires, and hobbies.
Yeah, and this is really one of the smallest of my concerns, but having made my move and the transition from the west side of L.A. to the west side of the valley.
The beach is gone.
You know? Well, I'm a 40-minute drive.
Hush, I'm in the middle of the country now.
I'm a 40-minute drive over the hill down to the beach.
Poor thing.
Right, yeah, I really suffer. But surfing has been something that's really important in my life.
Yeah.
It was pretty much all I did before entering the seminary, aside
the
from helping at church.
Surfer.
Right, yeah. Yeah.
I was just joking. When you were visiting us, we played Catan, and you were competitive. You were a competitive player, and I'm competitive too. And I was telling my mom recently, she's like, well, yeah, what do you think? He was a competitive surfer. So
yeah.
I digress. What do you do for fun that nourishes you?
Yeah, so I've been surfing a lot the last few weeks, getting ready for my transition out to the San Fernando Valley. Now I'm a Val.
Valley girl.
Yeah, not a valley girl, but a Val, right? Yeah.
Is that what they call a man who's from the valley?
Just a Val.
Just
yeah,
a Val.
Go home,
okay.
Vals. Yeah. So now I'm that, but I still get out to surf from time to time. It's not the center of my life like it used to be. Lots of bike riding. I've been bike riding a lot, even though it's getting up to 100 degrees and higher out there in the valley.
But you don't have humidity.
I've come across some beautiful places that are just a 10 or 15 minute bike ride away from the parish. I'm riding up into the hills. There's a train track that goes up into these like rocky hills, and I'm like expecting like a smokestack and a train heist any minute now, because it just looks like I've ridden into the Wild West. And it's amazing to know that there are places so accessible like that in Los Angeles still. So those are some of the things that I do just to get out and about and be nourished by God's creation, but also the challenge and the effort it takes to get up and over these hills, is that I can relate that to the spiritual life in some way, is that when it feels like I've got nothing left, there's always going to be just enough left to get me back home, right? Yeah, that's a really important spiritual lesson. But also lots of music in my life. Music has been an important part of my life since high school. So
Playing or listening?
Both. Most of my room is half filled with instruments right now. Like, I've moved into an old convent while I serve at Alemany, and so I've got like convent sized rooms, and so half of my room is taken up with my stand up bass and my guitars and my banjos and my ukulele, and even though that doesn't take up a lot of space. But music has been so important to me. So that's a part of my prayer at night.
Food for the soul.
Was I just take a guitar or a uke with me into the Blessed Sacrament Chapel and just do praise and worship before the Lord.
Twice.
So I am nourished by music and prayer and getting out and about in what is actually quite the beautiful city we have here in Los Angeles, believe it or not.
So it sounds like it's been a transition for you. And I think that's where I find myself right now. Is like, spiritually, I know where I'm at, and I'm fighting for it with, a baby. Sometimes it's hard to make a daily Mass, or as I joke, like, I can make it to daily Mass, but she's got, like, a ticking time bomb, as you've been around her and her crying, and no such thing as praying for half an hour after Mass or necessarily half an hour before, so you have to make those separate spaces. But in terms of fun, like, it sounds like you're transitioning. Okay, surfing isn't as accessible. You're learning, you know, a new time frame, what's available. You're in a new area, learning new bike riding. For me, I'm in that transition of, like, the fun things I love to do looks a little different, especially because of the humidity in the Midwest. Like, I'm a hardcore outdoors person. Thank the Lord my child loves to be outside as well. But you can't be outside the same way you can be in California. It can be 100 degrees and hot here, and it's 70 degrees and humid, and you're like, I'm sticking to myself. So learning to be outside at the right times of day, making time for it, has been so important. You know, for me, dancing has always been a fundamental part of, like, my joy activities, I guess you could say, that nourishes me. But what I've been learning in this transition is you have to savor those simple moments, that they might be briefer in life. And I think so many people say, oh, what do you mean? You know, this so-called me time. Do what you love, but do it with your loved ones. Make time, even if it's simple, for those brief moments. If you're just joining us, join us again tomorrow here on Relevant Radio, Trending with Tim Ray. Jim O'Day discussing the challenges pornography poses to the culture. We'll be back tomorrow.
Morning Air with John Morales.
We hope to continue to bring the light of Christ to Morning Air every day. Try to look at everything that's happening in the world from an authentic Catholic perspective.
Morning Air with John Morales.
Our faith is not a spectator sport. We got to come down from the stands and get in the game.
John Morales.
I'm also reunited with my old colleague, Glenn Leverance. We go way back to the early days of Morning Air.
Morning Air with John Morales. 5 a.m. Central on Relevant Radio.
What we do here is very different. We can report on the news, but we can also offer that moral perspective.
I'd like to see all Catholics on their knees in front of the Blessed Sacrament praying the rosary, because Jesus is the one who's the answer.
Bringing Christ to the world through the media. Relevant Radio.